Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County. Today is Episode 5, Not Just a Child's Instrument. Welcome to this week's episode of Color Country Politics. I'm your host, Jesse Harris. With me, I have Jenny Hendricks.
Hello.
Cindy Bullock.
Hello.
And our special guest, Debbie Johnson, the current Iron County Recorder. Thanks for coming out today.
Thank you.
So, why did you decide to run for County Recorder in the first place?
Aside from the glamour.
So much glamour.
What drew you to that,
office? You know, I can't say that I ever aspired to be the County Recorder. It was back in the day that we were poor. We had five little kids, and a job opening came with the county. And my husband and I decided, you know, this is a great opportunity. Let's go for it and see what happens. I started in 1988. Dixie Matheson was the new recorder at the time, and she gave me a chance and hired me up. And I did nothing but just menial things. I did computer input. And the computer was brand new, back then. Brand new back then. And up until that point, they had just been writing in the big abstract books. Every document was written by hand. Mm-hmm. Everything was done that way. And so I was trying to learn the computer. They didn't understand it, so they were having a hard time teaching what to do. But that's how I started. And then through the years, as you move up and you learn more things and have more opportunities, then after I'd been there about 16 years, I thought, you know what? I might outlive these guys. And I did hope that someday the opportunity would come that I would be able to at least put my name in the hat and be able to run for the recorder.
So it takes a fair amount of experience to get to the point where you can actually run the recorder's office.
Oh, definitely. There is no, like we said before, there is no recorder school. You learn by the School of Hard Knocks. You go there. I had no idea what a section, township, and range was. They told me to go to the map and help someone at the counter find their section. And I'm thinking, what's that? So they hand you a great big map. And I didn't know that they run east, west, north, south, and that your sections start at the right and go to 7 and drop down and then go to the left and then go back. I had no idea any of that stuff. But those are the things you learn day by day and mostly by the School of Hard Knocks.
So, Debbie, tell us exactly what does the recorder's office do?
Our job is to be the official record of documents for the county. We are the protectors, the safeguard people for all of the records. We make sure that they are entered correctly when we record them. So, say, Jenny, you would bring a document to my office. And you were trying to sell some property to someone. And you bring that document in, and I check to make sure you have signed that document, that you have a notary on the document, that you have a legal description that describes that certain piece of property that you're trying to sell. I don't proof that legal at the time. I just make sure it's on the document. Then I'm going to give it an entry number and a book and page. Because the other part of my job is not only do I put it of record, but I have got to be able to make a copy of that record at any time for whoever wants a copy of it. So once I get it recorded, then it goes through the process of having to be entered. So they would enter your name as the from person, whoever you're selling to as the to. We type in your legal description, and then it goes to a proofer, and they proof everything that they put in. But it's not until it gets clear to the mapping section that we figure out if you have tried to encumber someone else's property because your legal description went 5 feet too far or something like that. So we have to be very diligent in making sure that it's not Jennifer Hendricks, but Jenny, or however you you own the property. We make sure the names are correct. We make sure that the legal you've provided matches exactly the legal we show that you own.
And I kind of made a joke earlier about it, you know, being so glamorous, but it's the kind of office in the county where no one really pays attention to it until something goes sideways. And then everybody is, you know, screaming at the recorder and wanting to know why this is happening or this isn't happening. And I could tell you, you know, a thousand stories over the years of people who have filed things incorrectly because it's not your job to to make sure that the document is necessarily accurate as far as what is in it, what the contents are. It's just your job to make sure that it's recorded correctly, legal descriptions are correct. You know, for example, years ago, I was involved in a transaction. We went clear through the whole thing, got to signing, to settlement, and realized that the legal description, it was for a twin home, it was for the wrong half. No. So instead of the east half, it was the west half. And it had been, there was a mortgage on it. And so we had to stop everything. The seller had to go back to their mortgage company and unravel all of that because it had been incorrectly processed at some point in time, you know, during its history. So it's a really important thing that nobody really thinks about until there's an issue.
You know, we are the first step of the taxing process. So when you bring me a document, our office is the one that is going to attach that taxing number to it. And that taxing number lives with that parcel throughout its life. It stays there. That's how Cindy can assess it. That's how the auditor puts the, the auditor calculates the tax amount.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then the treasurer goes out and sends the notices. But if I do something incorrectly, then it's going to affect every other mm-hmm. department. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure that acreage mm-hmm. is calculated correctly. Mm-hmm. I have to make sure that legal description mm-hmm. ends up to be correct in the long run, or it does wash down to a lot of different uh-huh. areas.
So this requires a high degree of working with other departments and elected officials in the county, since there's this chain reaction of events.
That's right. If I do the wrong acreage, it really causes her grief.
Yeah, I'm going to value it incorrectly because the acreage is incorrect. Uh-huh. And they're going to get a bill that's not correct. And they're going to pay taxes that are incorrect. So the accuracy in your office is very important.
It is. It's very, very important. And we do our very best. We proof, we reproof. And there's always things that get by. You try so hard not to have things happen, but there are mistakes that happen, and eventually trickling down through the process of the county, it does get caught, and we usually always get them rectified. Mm-hmm. But we do try very, very hard to be accurate in everything that we do.
Your office does a great job, yeah. Debbie.
Thank you.
Really.
I do have very, very good employees. That's one thing I have been blessed with from day one, is good, conscientious, mm-hmm. hardworking employees, and so I'm grateful for that.
Do you find a lot of opportunities to work with recorders in other counties too, best practices or things that you've learned?
Yes. You know, the one thing I have loved about the Recorders Association is years back, they did a best practice booklet. Mm-hmm. And in that booklet, they each kind of county was able to submit some of the issues that they had been through. And then they found the code that would answer that issue. Mm. And so we do have this little, we call it our little cheat book, that you can go through and say, okay, we've got this problem. What code is going to back us up on that? And so it does have the code listed, and so it really has helped us a lot. I love the recorders as far as being able to share information. Every county has been put in different situations, mm-hmm. and they are very good to share the knowledge. You know, don't do this. We tried it. It didn't work out. Or, you know, this worked out really, really well for our county. Maybe try instituting that. If you don't mind, I've got one little example. Years back when I first started, Millard County had come across the idea. Well, to back up a little bit further, we used to do our tax sale in a binder. Everything came through under one entry number. So we had 200 parcels that went for tax sale, and it was recorded under one entry number, with 200 or 300 parcels of ground stuck in there somewhere, and the person would lose their property that way, but then the county was not issuing a deed outright to when it passed on to the next person. So then all of a sudden you'd be going through your abstract, which is our history of the parcels, and find, oh, it went from John, now Joe so-and-so has it, but we didn't know why it was in Joe's name. Anyway, Millard County had come up with the idea of making sure that the treasurer recorded the paper that says this property is going for tax sale. So we record that now, and then the day of the tax sale, we record a new document that says this was sold, this was retained. Then, a few weeks later, the auditor's office brings us down a tax deed from the county to the new owner. So it really makes a nice, clean chain. And thank heavens for another recorder that gave our recorder the idea to do that, because it has truly, truly been a good thing.
You know, one of the things I think that we deal with kind of in the rural areas that maybe larger metropolitan areas don't have to deal with is you record water rights as well. And I don't think that's really common. How does that process work in your office?
You know, it took me years to figure out that we recorded the water rights all right. And we sent copies of every water deed to the state water engineer's office. Unbeknownst to us, they were going in a box and in the basement.
Yeah.
But we did not know, so we did not tell the people, you need to take this document now and file it with the water office.
Yes.
And so for many years, there were real issues with that. Yeah. Now we send everything to the state. The state is the one that's supposed to be the final say. We send an email right up there. If the name is the same, if the water right number is the same, they automatically transfer it and everything's fine. They do not have to go file it at the water engineer's office anymore.
And I'm just going to go back just a little bit. I'm not sure that all of our audience knows when we talk about the tax sale or what that even means. So in Utah, if you have unpaid taxes for 5 years, then it goes to a public auction and is sold to the highest bidder. The bids start at the unpaid tax amount. The county does a really good job trying everything they can to let people redeem or pay those taxes off. But we do have tax sale every year in May, third week of May generally, and we sell those parcels that are that have taxes, a 5-year unpaid taxes on those. So sorry, I don't know.
That's
who,
perfect.
We all know, but there may be people listening.
No, that's overwhelming.
Well, hey, people are here for the inside ball.
That's right.
You know, one thing we have found though is that most people truly do try to redeem their property if at all possible. And so it's just those few stragglers that.
Yeah, they're usually not the most desirable property, or there's something that is. Maybe it doesn't have
water
doesn't have legal access, some strange thing that would make it not as desirable.
I've seen people who have inherited, you know, property out in Burrell.
Never seen it.
And, you know, they're 7 states away, and it's just not something that they're interested in. So sometimes it's not as tragic as it sounds.
Another practice that they did years and years ago was they would do a less system. They would say, here's this parcel of ground, and you'll start at the taxes. Now we're going to start lessing feet or something like that. So we had parcels for years, 1 inch wide by 250 feet long, because they had lessed it down to that amount. Can you imagine how you'd feel when you went to tax sale if you did not read that legal description?
Oh, shoot.
To all of a sudden you find out you've got 1 inch strip of property, 250 feet long, out in the middle of the sagebrush.
Right.
And so we quit that practice too.
So speaking of, you've been there for how long?
30 years.
So tell me, what's changed? You talked about before you started or right when you started, they just started using computers and they used to have. What other things have changed in your?
I think back of it. I'm the good old gal that send me in the vault and give me the Bible. We call the Bible, where it's got all of the sections, townships and range listed. And it tells me, go to book A and look on this page. And that's how we did it for years. You just went to that book and it told you where to go. And then the computer, when we had to learn how to search on that, we were just like little lost lambs. I'm here to tell you, because we really had no idea how to do it that way. But it's marvelous now. We have everything backed up. Everything is on the cloud now, to where you can find anything you want on the computer. And that is nice. You can do most everything remotely. Mm-hmm. You can record remotely now. You take it to an institution. Yeah. And they simplify or e-record. And so you don't even have to darken my doors. You just come in and it's recorded. So many changes in technology that has made things so much better for the public. Yeah. So much better for the public.
Yeah.
There's so many people that rely on that recorder's information. It's just us. It's okay. But there's so many people that rely on that recorder's information. You know, if I want to do a market analysis on a property, I do it right from my office, you know, right from my chair, and I can get square footage information, age information. Mm-hmm. I can go look and see, you know, what their original mortgage was on it. That kind of gives me an idea of, you know, how much room do we have versus, you know, where they are in the market and equity position and so forth. So just a tremendous amount of information that not just realtors, but appraisers, you know, and then of course you've got the title industry that is so heavily involved. It really touches a lot of, you know, people in the industry, lenders and
lenders.
So it's the technology part of it is something that helps a lot of people in the community. And when the courthouse was being remodeled, and the site was down a couple of times, you know, I mean, it throws everything into chaos.
It really does. You know, and the people, they call and they're almost in panic mode, you know, what am I doing? I'm way down here. I need this information. And so we did our very best through that little transition area to look up whatever information we could and get that information to the people. Our big books that we didn't have a lot of them scanned at the time were locked in a closet down in the basement the building here. So that made things a little bit difficult, but we did try everything we could. Many of the time I was hoisting one of my employees on top of those stacks and they were crawling back through there trying to find a book. But we did try very, very hard to accommodate the people the best we could to get through that. But people are very dependent on the technology now. It's made it very, very nice.
It sounds like the technology, too, enables you to do more work with the same number of employees.
Definitely.
I've seen that trend play out in a lot of industries, in government especially. You see the employment numbers for state of Utah have stayed flat for, you know, like 15 years, even with the huge population growth, because we're a state that's like, let's get into this technology. Let's use it. Let's really embrace it. And you know, it's great to see that it's not just the state level, but even down here at our local level, that's having a positive impact for us.
Do you know one thing that I was truly amazed at? I really thought my people would kind of balk at the idea. My chief deputy, Carrie Jeffries, she came up with the idea of, okay, let's scan everything in. If we're going to go to Cedar, let's get everything scanned in. And I looked at her like a deer in the headlights because I am not a technical person. But she says, you know what, we can build these groups and we'll scan this information in. I can put them into books. And then you guys are going to have to go in and name each book and page and things in there. But she says it's going to be so much better for the public. And it was. So for a full year and a half, we did nothing all day once we finished our recording but stand and scan.
Wow.
As fast as we could scan. We just got it in there. And then another person would sit there and do 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, very, very monotonous work. But they worked their hearts out trying to get everything in there as best they could.
So beneficial for the community and the people who rely on that information.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's great.
So what about privacy? That's a real issue. And I think we should make sure the public understands that your documents are public records. So can you talk about that a little bit? Or
yes, everything in my office, and I really don't know if people, like you say, do understand that everything that comes through my door is for public use. Anyone can come in and look at it. They can get a copy of it. They can't change it or make any alterations to it that way, but they can have copies of it. So if people do put a lot of private information, social security numbers, driver's license numbers, anything like that on their documents, they do have to understand that it is illegal for me to redact that number off. And so it's going to be on there for the public to view.
Yeah, I remember not long after I started working at the county, I was shocked that you could look up where I live. My house, everything about my house is public, but nobody can know what kind of car I drive. So it's kind of one of those crazy things. DMV motor vehicle records are protected and are not private, but ownership of property is private. I just think that was kind of an interesting.
But, you know, if we do try to keep things too into ourselves, then that's going to make Jenny's heart very, very difficult.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The title company's job, very, very difficult. Sure. Banking industry, yeah. things like yeah. that, it makes hard. So we do have to put the information out there. But it is a little unnerving to know that somebody can come into an office and see your property. And
right.
we have pictures of some of them. Now, you did take that wonderful technology away from us, which I loved. immensely when you got your new computer system, but
we're working
pictures,
on getting it back.
I hope so. The pictures, it's so fun for people to able to bring up their parcel and say, oh yeah, that's my house or that's my neighbor's house. And then they know that they're to the right place. So, mm-hmm. so that is nice.
So we know that a lot of information is public, you know, right. for instance, the legal description, which can be an actual legal description or the address, square footage, acreage, you can look up the amounts of the original mortgage, mm-hmm. but I know Utah is different than some of the surrounding states. What is important in Utah that remains private, you know, relative to some of our surrounding states here?
Do you know, we're a non-disclosure state, and so I would never really know the sales price of a piece of property. I'm going to know the amount of money you borrowed. Mm-hmm. on that property, but I would never know if you put a down payment down or anything like that. But most everything else is truly public.
Mm-hmm. So. And that's it's a conversation that comes up in my industry occasionally is, you know, the fact that we are a non-disclosure state and the fact that the state won't know what you paid for your property unless you tell them. Mm-hmm. And that isn't public knowledge, which I think most people are comfortable with that.
Yeah. It makes it a little bit harder if you're an appraiser. We have people that'll come in from another state and be like, how do you do your job?
Yeah.
I guess everyone just jumps onto Zillow.
Yeah.
Well, Zillow is not correct, interestingly enough, because we're a non-disclosure state. And as an industry, we don't report sales prices to Zillow. Kind of a segue into my industry, but... So your Zestimate is typically doesn't have anything to do with reality in Utah because Zillow pulls their information from public records. And so if the sales price isn't publicly disclosed, they don't know. So don't trust your Zestimate. There's my plug. Sorry to hijack that, Debbie.
I learned that out during it. I learned that during a refinance.
Yeah.
It's saying, oh, this is what your house is worth. And then the appraiser comes and is like, oh, your house is worth about $25,000 more than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Came in on the low ball. So in your time of working with records, what's one of the more interesting records you've come across?
Oh, heavens, we've got so many. We have every record that's ever been recorded in Iron County, 1850s.
Wow.
I've got all of those old handwritten. They come in little tiny books, and the writing is glorious to look at. It is beautiful, but almost impossible to read.
Right.
I mean, the swirls, the beautiful things that make penmanship lovely to look at, but it's very difficult to read. But our records do go clear back into the 1850s, and they did things much different back then. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of, you know, we homesteaded this, and we've got 5 acres, and it's out in the northeast quarter of such and such. And so it's hard sometimes to find exactly the piece that they're trying to describe from what information they gave.
Mm-hmm.
Chains, they measured with chains and links.
Wow.
A lot of the descriptions come up with so many chains. And I often wondered how that would ever be accurate, because if your links were a little thicker than the next chain or your, you know, then it's going to be off a little bit, and you go 500 feet with an odd chain, and it's not going to be the same as the chain before. But it is quite fascinating to read some of those perches.
Really,
there was a perch, and the chains, links, perches.
Some of them, I've seen some old ones that actually say you go so many feet to
from the rock
or to the tree, and you're thinking, does the tree even still there? Did somebody move the rock?
No, so many of them, they did. They said, the old yellow church, we had one time that said, you start at the corner of the old yellow church, and you go 50 rods this way, and, you know, I don't remember the exact footage, but I thought, I'm sure that old yellow church either got painted right. or it's gone. You know? And so, you know, it's kind of touch and go on those things. But yeah.
Interesting.
You probably have to play some sleuths, start with the current records and kind of work your way backwards. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So many people come in for genealogy. That I will say that's one thing that we do have a lot of, is they want to come and find where great-great-grandpa homesteaded in the valley. Okay. Uh-huh. And it is a huge challenge for us because they have nothing, absolutely nothing to go by other than it was probably in the late 1800s and my great-great-grandfather's name is such and such. And but we have so little information. So at that point, all we can do is get our old indexes out and start looking for the name.
Wow.
And then that person has to decide, oh, maybe that's the right property. A lot of them were out in places like Chimney Meadows or places like that, that you have to kind of try to surmise where that is and things. But
well, and I was surprised too. My uncle passed away not long ago, and he was in the military for just 1 4-year term. And if they were looking for his service history or something, because then he would be eligible for, I don't even know what it was, but... But we were able to look through the same thing, the old documents, and about what time, what war, where was he, and because my aunt didn't have those records, and you were able to help me at least get close to find some of them. We found his brother, but not him. Anyway.
Yeah, we do have a lot of the military records, and how smart of those people to come and record it in the recorder's office. I don't know about you guys, but how many times do you put a precious document somewhere and then you either forget where that precious document was or you move and you put them somewhere else and then you have a hard time finding them? A lot of people's schooling, you get your schooling through the military and things like that, but you've got to prove what years you were in the military and things. So I truly do recommend doing any military documents, getting them recorded. We record those for free. We make you a certified copy for free, and then we just keep a copy in our records.
How interesting. I did not know that you did that in your office.
We do. Wow.
That's a great thing. If you have important documents, go to the recorder's office. Make sure they have it.
Right. It'll be attached to a piece of property.
Right.
But it's still there forever.
That's great. That is really interesting.
Yeah, otherwise you could lose it in the back corner of a file cabinet. Yeah.
And you also have to – we have many people there for a few years that wanted to come and record their wills because they were afraid – their wills were going to get lost or their kids wouldn't abide by them or whatever it would be. Mm-hmm. But what they didn't realize at the time, we do not like to do wills at all because there's a lot of private information in a will, and that is all public record. And so what you're deeding to Susie and Ben is right out there for everyone to know. And so we do not recommend wills and things like that. So.
But you do record death certificates.
We do record if it's attached to property.
Right.
If it is attached to a piece of property.
Interesting.
So what would you say would be your most amusing story as an elected official?
Oh, heavens. I think I go back to the old days. And the most amusing, I think I can't use the words, the language that they used back then.
This is a family show, right?
But when we were going from writing in those big abstract books, we were trying to write and get everything in accurately. And, of course, that's difficult because penmanship is hard and trying to transfer from this document to that document. But when these ladies were starting to go and having to type these legal descriptions onto the computer – and figure out, okay, what symbol is going to equal a degree or a minute or a second mark, because that's how property is measured. Mm-hmm. And the language was colorful. And then trying to get everyone on the same page.
Right.
Some people would use an exclamation point to symbolize the degree. Others used an asterisk. Some people used a question mark. But then it just threw everything into tilt, and then the computer would throw out errors because it all has to be the same.
Right.
So then we spent the next 5 or 6 years going through all of the documents again and having to standardize how it went in.
Wow.
So that was truly an interesting very interesting time. We went on the computer in 1983. I didn't start till 88, but 88 was the first year that they quit writing in the books because nobody trusted the computer. Right. They would just not, they would not let go of the books, and they did not trust it. And so we wrote, they dual did the work for 83 to 88.
Wow. So I want to get down to the reason of why we have you here is that you're retiring.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank heavens. 30 years. And it's not that, thank heavens, because I've loved my job. It has been a marvelous place to work. Wonderful people to associate with. I've learned so many things and had so many opportunities. But I am so ready to just travel and do the things that I want to do.
Sure.
It sounds like you've earned it.
It's been great. It's been interesting. It's been an interesting career.
So why did you decide to retire now in the middle of a term rather than waiting until end of term?
Well, you know, that's interesting. When I started working, I told my husband, I'll work for 30 years because I know we need that pension, but I'm done. At the end of that 30 years, I'm done. And so 2018 has been on my calendar for 30 years.
Oh, wow.
As being my year to be done. November 28th, 1988 was the day I started working.
Wow.
And so I told him, I will work till the end of November 2018, but then I am done. I'm having December all to myself. Well, and that plan was going fantastic until 4 years ago, the state legislature decided that all of the elected officials should not be on the same rotation as far as when they're up for election. Mm-hmm. There had been an instance where two or three counties had lost all of their elected officials in one cycle. And that is very, very difficult on a county. So the legislature went ahead and they had the assessor's office, the treasurer's office, and the recorder's office, and they put us on a six-year term so that it would stagger mm-hmm. from some of the other offices. Well, then I was put in the situation, am I going to give up my 2018 goal that I've had circled for 30 years and stay the extra 2 years, or do I go ahead and say you're going to have to pick an interim person for those last 2 years? And there's a part of me that said, you know, my health is still good. I could still go to work. And then I think, but in 2 years, is my health still going to be good? And I've missed those 2 years of being able to travel in my trailer or do the things with my grandkids mm-hmm. that I wanted to do. And so that's why I just stuck with my 2018 goal that I've had for 30 years. And it is going to put us in a position of having the central committee pick an interim recorder.
I want to pick up on that. You're probably going to go to the same place, but... So kind of talk us through, what is the process for finding your replacement midterm? What does that look like?
Well, what it is where I am a Republican. I've stayed in my office as a Republican. The Republican Central Committee, which is the chairs and vice chairs, the elected officials, and the party leadership, makes up this central committee. And that group of people will have the opportunity to, they had the opportunity to take applications for people that would want my job. Mm-hmm. And I think they had three names turned in to them. And then they will have a meeting. And during that meeting, these people will have the opportunity to speak to the group. And then they will be voted on by this central committee.
And that's actually coming up next week.
Yeah,
is going to be October 25th. That's on Thursday. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a candidate meet and greet starting at 5:30, and they will start the meeting at 6:30. Certainly, you do not have to be part of the Central Committee to go if you'd like
that's
to go
right.
and just
no,
see any, things.
Yeah, anyone is welcome to come and listen in.
Look at the process.
Sure.
You will be credentialed, and only the voting members are allowed to vote, but anyone is welcome to come to that meeting.
Yeah. And you know, I highly suggest people getting involved in things like that. When I started to work, I had never been to a caucus meeting.
Wow.
I had never really got into politics, and I didn't realize for when I started that it was a political career.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even put that all together. And so as soon as I started, the recorder really encouraged me to start going to my caucus meetings, get to know how the political system works. Try to stay involved. Do as much as you can. And I truly suggest that to people. I don't think people realize that it's our local government that truly affects their life. It's not as much the national stage that's going to affect you as our local government truly affects you.
Very, very well said.
Yeah. So, if you're not on the central committee, find out who your precinct chair and vice chair are. Talk to them and say, hey, here's who I think is the best. Talk to those people. Find out, where they sit. It's going to be at Canyon View Middle School, pretty centrally located in the county. So that's a good opportunity for anyone to jump in. You don't even have to be a Republican to go talk to the precinct chair and say, hey, I'm in your precinct. I've got an opinion.
That's right. And I think people forget that because, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, whatever you are, these decisions are going to affect you.
Absolutely.
And so go to your people and express your opinions and how you feel.
Yeah, and if you need, there's a nice map actually on the Iron County website that you can put in your address and it will tell you your voter precinct if you don't know. Just put in your address and then from there you can either go to the Iron County Republican Party's website and it will tell you the precinct chair and vice chair. You can reach out to them or you can probably call, although John Whitaker, who's the clerk, is not the official for the party because it's a partisan office. Right. It is the Republican Party who makes that decision, but I'm sure you could reach out to John and he would help you find those people or call Andrew Young or anyone from the Iron County
Executive
Committee.
That's great.
Well, do you have any parting thoughts that you'd like to leave with us?
I just really want the listeners to know that politics is challenging at best. I mean, absolutely challenging at best. But the only way you're going to have a say in what direction things go and life changes for you is if you get involved and support the people that you truly care about, the people you trust, because they are going to make decisions that will affect you. And so get involved. Enjoy it.
Perfect.
And enjoy your retirement.
I will.
And thanks for what you have done. It's amazing and to be able to rely so heavily and so completely on the recorder's office. It's an amazing thing, and you've done just an unbelievable job. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming out today, and we'll call that a wrap.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.